This is Rainmaker FM, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at rainmakerplatform.com.
Greetings, super friends. My name is Sonia Simone, and these are the Confessions of a Pink-Haired Marketer. For those who don't know me, I am a co-founder and the chief content officer for Copyblogger Media. I'm also a champion of running your business and your life according to your own rules. As long as you don't lie and you don't hurt people, this podcast is your official pink permission slip to run your business or your career exactly the way you think you should. And today I've been thinking about a question that comes up all the time, which is, how long is it going to take my business to get off the ground? How long is it going to take me to start making some money, specifically usually with my online-based business? And that's a natural question since I teach people how to start or build businesses. So there is this school of thought that says, well, it can't be taught. You know, if you have to ask, you just shouldn't even try. And all of that makes me angry. Of course it can be taught. Of course the skills behind building a business, growing a business, making it stronger, getting it off the ground, they can all be taught. But I'm going to talk about some of the maybe less obvious components to that. I'm also thinking about what you might call self-improvement for smart people. And I say that because we have for a long time had internet marketing for smart people. So it's kind of a theme. And just the idea is working on your thinking patterns, working on how your mind works in an evidence-based way, in a way that is consistent with, you know, all kinds of really, really interesting research that's coming out of neuroscience, and that is really based on a pretty solid understanding as opposed to maybe, you know, mythology or wishing something was true or just, you know, kind of a fast-talking self-help guru that wants to take money out of you, but really doesn't have a firm foundation for the things they're teaching. There's a whole new school of self-improvement, if you want to call it that, that is really based on science. And there's some very cool things that we're learning about how people learn, how people grow, how people change, how people get better. So I want to talk a little bit about those two things today. How long it takes for my business to start making money, and what are some of the best practices for changing my thinking patterns? Because those two things go together. Because there are two parts to being a business owner. There's the practical stuff about building an audience, crafting content that gets shared, developing your professional network, building your products and services around what an audience wants. And then there's the head game. And in my experience, both personally and from observation, the head game is the hard part. So I totally understand why it is that people think that this whole conversation around the mental game of business is what's often called fluffy, because there aren't any really good action steps. So I can sit here and talk to you about how to build an email list that will nurture your business and nurture prospects until they're ready to buy. And I can give you very solid steps and solid resources and a couple of recommended providers. When I start to talk to you about how to improve your mental patterns so that you'll be more successful, I don't have the same really concrete steps. I don't have the same specific processes. It's not something you can memorize. It's not something you can just go download. It's not like, you know, Neo when he jacks into the Matrix and then he knows Kung Fu. I can't give that to you in that way. I wish I could. And the right set of steps for me might very well be, you know, a pointless time-wasting exercise for you. But I do have to say, when I encounter a student who gets impatient with the fluff and the rah-rah, and, you know, I'm really into rah-rah, and I'm really into the softer, squishier elements of success, I get it when people are impatient with that. And the first thing I ask is, okay, let's get started with some basics. So what kind of audience have you pulled together that's listening to your message about, you know, whatever your topic might be? So they have no audience. Okay, that's fine. What steps have you taken to get your audience in place? So are you blogging? Are you podcasting? Are you creating videos? Are you guest posting? Are you networking with other content publishers? Do you have your email list set up? is the content that you have loaded into that email list solid? And 9 times out of 10, I get crickets for answers. I just get a blank stare. And that's when I know it's time to go back to the fluff. Because it's not that we don't know what to do. It's that we don't know how to get ourselves to do what we know we need to do. So a lot of people start businesses and a lot of people get over this, you know, not being able to make yourself do the thing because they have to. So my business partner started a project called Unemployable. And it's funny, but it's not really a joke. You know, all of the partners in my business have a definite unemployable streak in our makeup. So for myself, my habitual patterns as an employee were just driving me out of my mind. And to tell you the truth, I think I was also driving my colleagues out of their minds. And at that same time, the company that I was working for was facing some very significant challenges in the marketplace. External events, no fault of that company, but the challenges were very real. And I was my family's breadwinner, and I had a 3-year-old. So I had a lot of reasons to develop some new and somewhat uncomfortable patterns as a business owner versus being an employee because I had to. I put the pieces together because I didn't have a lot of options and I had exhausted the ones I thought I might be able to explore. And a lot of people do start businesses for this reason, because they have to. They are backed up against the wall. I didn't fit into that traditional corporate structure very well at all. I'm not good at playing that game. And I also hated it. So I made something of my own instead. But I do not happen to believe that you have to get thrown into the deep end to learn how to swim. I don't believe that you have to have your back against the wall. I think there is another way to do it, a kinder way, a less, you know, excruciatingly painful and terrifying way. And it revolves around developing a habit of working on new habits. In other words, becoming the kind of person who can consciously acquire new and beneficial habits, both habits of behavior and habits of thinking. And I think that science is very firmly on my side when I say that anyone can learn to do this. You have to just gather the right resources together and then get started. So if you're going to do something new, it's not necessarily about starting a business. It could be anything new that you're working on. You're going to need to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. Joshua Foer wrote a really cool book called Moonwalking with Einstein, and it was about memory champions, people who memorize amazing things competitively. So for example, these are folks who can take multiple decks of cards, just play the cards down one at a time, you know, ace of spades, king of hearts, queen of diamonds, two of clubs. Just play the cards one at a time, and in the amount of time it takes them to put the cards on the table, they can memorize the order of that deck. And so when you scoop the cards up and turn it back over, they can tell you what order every card in the deck is. And the people who are good at it can do it with multiple decks in one stretch. It's very interesting and impressive. And Foer's book is about how that happens, what kind of person you have to be. And it turns out you do not have to be somebody with an extraordinarily gift for memory. It's a skill. It's just an ability you can learn to do if you put the time in. Now, one of the interesting things he talks about in that book is an observation that time goes faster as we get older, and we all have that feeling. When you were a kid, time just stretched out, you know, endlessly. And as an adult, it goes faster and faster every year. And in your 20s, time starts to pick up steam, and then in your 30s, it gets faster, and in your 40s, it gets faster. And apparently the reason that this happens is because we have more of our routines, more of our behavior every day on autopilot. We don't remember those autopilot routines because they're automatic. So when things are new, they fix themselves in our memory. They're memorable. And we have this perception of time being richer. Now, the business implication of that is the more time you spend on autopilot, the less creative, the less innovative, the less attentive you're going to be. The less you're going to notice, the fewer opportunities you're going to see, and the fewer areas to make the world better by serving customers in a new and interesting and creative way. And also, business advancement, especially when you're somewhat new to business or new to running your own business, progress and advancement normally comes from working on those things that don't work for you on autopilot at this point. So there are sort of two schools of thought about this in business, success, whatever you want to call it. Some people really advocate working on what you're already good at, on getting to be amazing at what you're already good at. So if you're good with numbers, you should work on that and become Warren Buffett, become somebody who's brilliant with numbers. If you're good with words, you should work on becoming brilliant with words and then just outsource everything you're not good at yet. And the other side of that is the self-help movement, which seems to think that you want to become an entirely new person, that, you know, everything about you is broken and we're going to fix the whole thing. We're just going to scrap you and change you into something else. So I think that both of those have some problems. Rather than scrapping some part of yourself or rejecting it or throwing it away or transmuting yourself into something unrecognizable, what I would love to see you do is to explore some parts of yourself that you tend not to spend that much time with. The purpose being to create more richness, more growth, more wisdom, you know, better roundedness, and to be able to do things that you might have put on a category of, I'm not good at that, and I'm never going to get good at that. So you might have heard of a book by Carol Dweck. It's called Mindset, and I will link to it in the show notes. And this was something that when I first ran across it, it was totally and truly revolutionary for me. Because Dweck identifies, both in children and in adults, two general patterns of belief about how we think of ourselves. The fixed mindset thinks of ourselves as I'm talented or I'm not talented. So I'm good at history and English, I'm not good at math and science. That's a fixed mindset. The idea that I have certain talents and abilities, and those come naturally and easily to me, and then I have certain inabilities, and that's because I'm not wired that way. I'm not meant to do that. The growth mindset is the idea that nobody comes into this world good at math and science. You get good at math and science by being interested in them and then finding out more about them, spending more time thinking about them, practicing math and science, digging into things that are a little bit difficult, you know, not the easy stuff, not just adding. You don't get better at math by adding two and two for 10,000 hours. That's not how it works. You get good at math by doing addition until that's easy, and then you add bigger numbers, and then you start doing subtraction, multiplication, division. You move on to algebra, trigonometry. You advance, and you work on more and more complex kinds of math, and you get good at it because you are putting time in to what's called deliberate practice. And deliberate practice is practice that is on things that you're not good at yet. And that's, people who are good at math are good at math because they've spent a lot of time with it. And they've spent a lot of time really delving into it and thinking about it on an ever and ever more complex level. And it's not so much that the growth mindset is correct and the fixed mindset is incorrect. It's that the growth mindset, in other words, the mindset of, I can get good at that if I put enough time into it, is much more practical and it's much more useful. People who have that fixed mindset and who think that life is mostly about what you're talented at or not talented at tend to get discouraged very quickly when they run up against something that they're not good at yet, and they won't try. And you really see this with children, which is why, according to Dweck and some other researchers, it's a bad idea to praise your kids for being smart. You don't want to say, wow, you did, you know, 4 pages of math homework in 10 minutes. You must be really good at math. What you want to say is, wow, I noticed you went through 4 pages of your math homework in 10 minutes. It looks like you're really excited about math. Maybe we should try and find you something that would challenge you even more, because clearly you really like to work on math and you like to work hard. Good job. So praising working hard rather than praising natural talent. And I will tell you that if you follow this principle that you should outsource everything in your business that you're not good at, if you're not good with numbers or you're not good at marketing, get somebody else to do it, that's a great way to lose your company, because it leaves you tremendously vulnerable to someone who is good at it and who might not necessarily have your best interests at heart. So there's an athlete I really love. He's a kettlebell athlete. He's a former gymnast. His name is Mark Rifkin. Very smart guy about fitness and strength. And he says, compete on your strengths, but train your weaknesses. So in other words, if you have a monster deadlift and a really wimpy bench press, compete in the deadlift. Go take your strongest lift and compete with that. But don't use that as a reason to neglect your upper body and just turn into this kind of T-Rex with these giant legs and these teeny weeny little arms. It's about learning to be comfortable with being good enough for some things. You don't have to accept I'm not good at that. You don't have to accept that I'm not good at numbers or I'm not good at marketing. You're not good at it because you haven't put the right kind of practice in. But you don't have to turn into a ninja either. You have to get good enough. You have to get good enough at numbers so that you can keep an eye on what's going on in your business. You have to get good enough at marketing that when you bring somebody in to handle your marketing, you have a very strong BS filter. This person's doing a good job. This person doesn't know what they're talking about. You have to know enough to be able to outsource, and you have to know enough to have some confidence and know what looks right and what doesn't look so good. So I'm going to give you a couple of tools I really like for getting my head into the right place because, you know, believe it or not, I was not a born business person. I was not comfortable with the idea of having my own business. I was past 40 years old before I thought I was the kind of person who could be a business owner. And in fact, reading Carol Dweck's book was one of the things that helped make a little crack in my understanding that let me think, you know, maybe I could do that. So I have three kind of favorite tools for getting my head in the right place, but I also think this is an ongoing practice. So you want to keep looking for things that are going to help you get to the right place. The first, you've heard me talk about it in the past, is meditation. And meditation is really about the practice of letting go of being on autopilot. So you have this usual groove of thinking, you have a lot of habitual thoughts, you have a lot of mental chatter that kind of goes on and on and on, and it's not conscious. Meditation is really about letting yourself pay attention to what is actually in front of you instead of the habitual storyline that goes through your head. And it can really help you when you get swamped with this feeling of, I'm never going to figure this out. I'm never going to get past this. It just lets you say, oh yeah, there's that thought again. Yeah, I recognize that one. That's an old friend. And you don't have to get caught up in it. You don't have to follow it right down the drain. You can just let it come and let it go. The other tool that I find very, very useful in this kind of practice when you're doing something that, you know, doesn't come naturally to you is the tiny habits movement, the small habits movement. There have been a number of excellent books out on it quite recently. So, you know, if you're not being thrown into the deep end to start a business, your back isn't against the wall. You might think that you're never going to be able to face learning all the things you have to learn, but you can. Instead of throwing yourself in the deep end, you do just like you do if you take swimming lessons. You show up and you start by getting your face wet. You start with a small habit and you can build from that. I have a number of favorite books on this. I wrote a post about it, so I will include all of that in the show notes. If you are listening to this in iTunes, you can grab those at pinkhairedmarketer.fm. And that practice of developing little teeny weeny habits and then letting those grow into bigger habits, it's very well studied. It's very, very effective. So for example, if creating content is a stumbling block for you, you know, writing your blog, recording your podcast, then you might want to work on content for literally 60 seconds a day, but do it every single day. And what that does is you get comfortable showing up at your keyboard or your microphone and you start spending more time because now you're not uncomfortable anymore and you're off and running. You might also want to look at my podcast on productivity for train wrecks, where I give you lots of ideas about how to do things if you're not one of those wonderful, efficient, getting everything done kind of people. Most of us aren't. A few of us are. And I have one more tool. It's actually been in my arsenal for a long time, but I haven't been so conscious of it. And that's studying something challenging or hard. So while I'm recording this podcast, I am traveling in a country where the first language is not English. And every day I have an experience where I feel like a total fool. So, you know, the lady at the grocery store every freaking day asks me if I want a bag. And every freaking day I stand there like a pig looking at a wristwatch, trying to process the situation so I can come up with an intelligent answer. I mean, it's pretty amazing. So travel is inconvenient and travel is expensive, and we don't get to do it all the time. I really love to travel, but I can't do it all the time. But one of the things you can do if you'd like to create the situation of getting comfortable, being uncomfortable, and making mistakes would be learning a language. And learning a language is like traveling for your brain. So again, many people think, well, I would do that, but I'm not good at languages. You haven't put the time in to learning languages. There's a great new book out by a guy named Gabriel Weiner. It's called Fluent Forever. And it is hands down the best resource that I have seen for using the latest research on learning and on neuroscience to show you how people learn, specifically how people learn language, and why you're actually a lot better equipped to do that than you think you are. And then he shows you how to make it into a game. So if you ever wanted to learn a language, it is an amazing workout for your brain. It's really fun. It lets you talk to new people. And Weiner has a process for it that turns it into the kind of thing you'll do for fun. It's sort of like it'll replace, you know, watching TV or Facebook or playing a video game, because it's fun at that level. It's really absorbing and interesting, and you just want to make excuses to go do some more of it. And even if language is not necessarily something you want to work on right now, I would recommend his book just to show you what it looks like to break up something scary and intimidating and turn it into a series of manageable, fun mini games. So my friend, who's a brilliant dog trainer named Susan Garrett, took a quote that maybe a Napoleon Hill quote, I'm not sure, that says the successful person does what others will not do. And she turned it around. She turned the quote into the successful person makes a game of what others will not do. And I think that is a brilliant, brilliant observation. So, you know, maybe for you, it is starting a business, or it's starting a family, or going to med school, or learning trigonometry, going back to school and getting your degree. I don't know what the big scary project is that has you nervous and excited, but also maybe hesitating to start. So those three patterns have been powerful for me. Meditation, so I don't get stuck in my own explanation of why I suck. Tiny habits, so I get into the habit of putting myself into that uncomfortable zone in a way that feels safe and comfortable. And then some kind of hard but fun study project, so I can teach myself to actually enjoy learning and enjoy making mistakes. So I would love to hear about your big, scary, cool project, about something that you've been wanting to do, you've been intimidated to try. You might have taken some small steps, but the small steps don't seem to be rolling up to bigger steps because you're afraid, or you're not quite sure how to break it down, or you're not quite sure how to break through whatever plateau you might have reached. I would love to hear about it. Maybe we could even help you figure out a way to go to the next place. So if you would love to let me know that in the comments, I would love to talk to you about it. Again, if you are listening on iTunes, then a star rating or a review would be awesome. But B, swing on over to the site, swing on over to pinkhairedmarketer.fm and let us know. Leave a comment, leave a question, ask for more resources. I always love talking to you guys. You guys always leave really excellent comments. So would love to hear more from you on this. The Confessions of a Pink-Haired Marketer are brought to you by the Rainmaker Platform, the complete website solution for content marketers and online entrepreneurs. Find out more and take a free 14-day test drive at rainmaker.fm/platform. Thank you so much for your time and attention. It's awesome talking with you, and I hope to see you soon in the comments. Take care.